Off the Ball, GAA.
Yeah, I suppose they're just the memories. That's, like, I suppose, why we play the game. It's why we do all the trainings, why we come back in whenever we come back in. And I suppose just memories of that and having two cans inside the dressing room, a bit of crack, a bit of music playing. It's just what it makes.
Join
it really.
In the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Joined by Full House, Enda, Dara, Matthew. How's everyone doing?
Good morning.
Hello, Mick.
We also now have an email that works.
Do we, yeah?
Yeah, it's officially launched, breakfast@offtheball.com, if you want to get in touch with us that way. That will be the primary email for the Breakfast Buffet if you want to get us to talk about something or if you want to complain about something. That's the email that we will probably see it.
Yeah.
So if you want to...
Probably, yeah. TBC. No, the Breakfast Buffet has been an enjoyable addition to the breakfast menu, I would say, over the last couple of weeks. But yeah, it's a chance for us to talk about some things that might not get airtime and have a bit of a moan and a rant and sometimes even some informative analysis.
Yeah, yeah. Some
not always.
Some measured discussion.
Everything from Love Island to US propaganda.
Exactly, yeah. But no more Love Island, apparently. Fitzy, far too calm and stable a character. Yeah, that's a bit of a problem, is it?
Mm. That's the sort of reason.
It's not making him celebrity enough.
It's born first, but it's square for him. It's square for Fitzy. He's secured his place. He's topped his group, so to speak.
Has he? Yeah. But he's done it by kind of 1-0 wins in the group stage.
He's going to
need some fireworks in the knockout stages to get through, isn't he?
Potentially.
Yeah.
There will be hurdles coming his way at some point.
Yeah, that's a different sport.
Yeah, sorry.
What are you doing, like?
Yeah. We'll run through some of the papers here, starting with the Mail, and basically all of the papers have the Ireland game as the main story. Vive la Resistance, Wards Ireland push France all the way with a super display of fire and focus. That's on the Irish Daily Mail. The positive view from the Mail, I think probably rightly, and we'll get into that in a second. The Sun, though, wouldn't often go with the Sun second, but I have to say, very fond of this headline. Ducks in a woe. Girls in green sunk again by mallard quacker. So there you go. They went for three different duck mentions there in that. There you go. Obviously,
I think one too many.
Obviously, Melvin Mallard got an unbelievable goal to beat us last night.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about it, and I think it's a sign of how well this team has done in the last few months under Carlo Ward, that we're kind of disappointed and we're talking about some under par performances in the office today. France are, if not the best, then in the top three teams in the world, and had a game at home against us to qualify for the World Cup. You saw the scenes at the end. Big bloody game for France. And Ireland lived with them. And I think but for a missed chance maybe against 10, you know, with 12, 13 minutes to go, if that had gone in, I really would have fancied us to go and score another one at that stage, you know. So, it's not to quell disappointment, but it's more to say that is a sign of, if when Ireland lost 4-0 to Slovenia last year, I'd be very surprised if we were here going, you know, really kind of didn't get enough out of that 1-0 defeat of France to qualify for the World Cup.
There's very few teams in the world that would cause France those type of issues in their backyard. It was a very impressive performance. Look, the first half was a difficult watch at times. France were absolutely dominating the first 15, 20 minutes. And then once they scored, it felt like a tall task. But they came out of halftime like a new team. That's a sign of a good coaching ticket. And that's good. That's a sign of players that are really buying into what Carlo Ward is selling. And yeah, look, that Abby Larkin chance, if that goes in, you know, France are down to 10 women. That's a completely different game altogether. So it's a shame, all right. But even still, the results they got from this campaign they're so impressive. Beating the Netherlands, obviously on Friday night, and then
unlucky
going to France
in both games against France. You know, had the lead obviously in Ireland,
and the initial Netherlands fixture as well, away from home, very close to getting a result there. The two wins over Poland, completely convincing. So It's a very successful campaign, and it's not over either, obviously, the playoff to fall back on as well.
You'd have to fancy them in that, regardless of who they come up against, wouldn't you?
Yeah. It's good that we're following the time-honoured tradition with the women's team as well as the men's team, that we're complaining about changes midweek and bringing in players who have experience as opposed to players who are in form. So we'll talk about that
Abby
a little
Larkin,
bit more.
Abby Larkin, though, and she did miss that chance, which is definitely a pity. And, like, what a hero she could have been, like, last night, you know. But she she's the type of player that has the... Eamon Dunphy makes it his life mission to complain about why she's not in the Irish team. She has all that written all over her. Like, she is exactly that kind of player. She's a young kind of local, you know, she's obviously local to the Ringsend area, but she's kind of has that sort of like local to everywhere feeling about her. Like, you know, it's like, and, you know, very, very likable and such a hard worker, a tenacious footballer with that little bit of quality as well, like, you know. But I have to say, we were talking about it like during the week, it was really hard for them not to bring in Emily Murphy last night after her suspension. She had played, she was player of the match in, like, I think the previous three qualifiers before her suspension against the Dutch. Like, that's a player that you automatically bring in. At the same time, I don't know if I've seen many performances like Larkin's on Friday night. Like, that becomes undroppable. Do you change the team around completely to put in the two kind of like high wingers either side of Caruso? It's very attacking away to France.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, it was a tough decision. Like
I could see the merit in keeping Caruso there, because you saw it in the opening kind of 10-15 minutes when we did get the ball, which was scarce. Like, she did hold up the ball very well and it allowed us some sort of escape.
She was brilliant in Cork as well. Like,
she was, yeah. But I suppose it's one of those things, if you don't bring Emily Murphy back in, and the result goes the same way, we're probably saying the exact same thing.
Yeah.
In that, you have to bring her back in. She's been the best player in this campaign. So it's one of those where it's, you know, no matter what decision you make, you're probably in the wrong. But it's a good problem to have at the same time. Like, it's not something that this Irish team has had over the last maybe 10, 15 years. That depth and the real quality options coming off the bench. That's a new thing, so...
Small bit of the Troy Parrott off Emily Murphy in that sense of like, she has been the standout player for Ireland in this campaign, but I would fall on the side of, you play the player who's in the most recent form, and that was Abby Larkin.
Yeah.
Like, who had a great game more recently? Abby Larkin did. Probably would have erred on the side of maybe dropping Caruso for Larkin as opposed to Emily Murphy, but
I think Caruso's very important to how they play. You know what I mean? And they need that kind of central figure. Maybe not against France. Maybe it's legs and wide players that you need more. But yeah, I don't know.
I think you're right. Some people will say, you know, Caruso holds up the ball better and gives you an out ball. But you do have that out ball with Abby Larkin. It's just a different type of out ball. It's over the top of the defence as opposed to trying to hold the ball up and keep possession. I don't think last night was necessarily a game that, regardless of who we had up there, we were going to keep possession, and that was kind of proven with Caruso up there. So, like, there is that argument that the legs in behind might have caused a few more issues in the first half, and we might have been able to get out a little bit easier with that out ball. But
will we hear from a couple of the players?
Yeah, so Stephen Doyle was over at this game. He was speaking to the players and the management after the game, and we'll start with Denise O'Sullivan here, because she came into this game as well for Jess Sue, who started on the bench. And to be honest, she didn't have the best of games either. She was rusty in the first half, and probably late on there was a few mistakes on her behalf as well. And speaking to Stephen after the game, she was fairly quick to point this out herself.
Yeah, we're all disappointed. I think that just shows the growth of the team, that we're, you know, extremely disappointed not to automatically qualify against one of the best teams in the world. But I think we started probably the first half a bit slow. I think we may have sat back a little too much. But look, the second half we went at them, and I think when we went at them, we created chances. And look, it wasn't our night. We didn't finish the chances, but really proud of the team. Overall, proud of the character. You know, the bench made a big impact again tonight. Jessu, Abby Larkin coming in, you know, creating chances as well. So a lot to be proud of, but we have to keep our heads up and look towards October now.
On a personal level, coming into the game tonight, did you feel it was a good or a bad thing that you weren't playing on Friday?
Definitely bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never want to miss games. and then you're a game behind. And look, I know I could have been better myself tonight, and it's particularly in the first half, probably could have held the ball up a bit more for the team, but felt like we were just a bit under the cosh in the whole first half with a lot of pressure. But personally, I disappointed as well with my own performance, and look, I've over 100 caps for my country. I can take responsibility when it's time, and you know, tonight I wasn't really good enough, but that happens, and that's football, and I'll take that in the chin and go into October with a positive mindset.
Yeah, you look like it. The game has really affected you tonight, and I think a lot of supporters out there will be thinking, God, this woman's given everything for her country, and you know, we owe a lot to her. So I'm just kind of interested why you've kind of maybe taken it so hard this evening.
Yeah, I'm disappointed, but look, it is what it is. I always want to perform for my country, do you know what I mean? But in that first half, I thought I had to do more, and I didn't, but that's okay, and I keep my head up, and big game's not October to play for the team, but we're all disappointed right now because, you know, we wanted to get to the World Cup, we wanted to qualify automatically, but France are a world class team, and as I said, it just shows the growth of the team that we're disappointed to not go automatically through. But as I said, we've big games in October, and we've got to keep our heads up.
Yeah, it's Denise O'Sullivan there chatting to Stephen Doyle. I would say Jesu probably would have started this game had Denise O'Sullivan not been available for it again. She was excellent in the second half of the Netherlands game. She came off the bench. She came off the bench again last night. I thought she was just like really composed on the ball, which probably Denise O'Sullivan uncharacteristically wasn't against France. She's generally the most composed player on the pitch in most games.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any doubt that you have to play Denise O'Sullivan, though. I think it's interesting to hear her there. And it's very honest. And obviously it's coming from a place of disappointment because she knows she wasn't at her best last night. But I mean, I was at the Aviva for their last game before her suspension, obviously, and we said Emily Murphy was player of the match, but I thought Denise Sullivan probably was, or very close to it anyway, like she was outstanding that day. The one criticism of her game that you might have over the years, and she mentioned the first half there, is that when Ireland are under the cosh, and it happens to a lot of number 10s, it's not specific to Denise Sullivan, she does kind of tend to get lost in the game a little bit. There's sort of almost no role for her, and then you start trying too hard and so on. And I think when Ireland had more of the ball in the second half, and she did get more involved and she became more central, we were in the trying too hard territory. And I think she was trying things that weren't on a lot. And sometimes it was a recycling place where we maybe went for the killer pass and it was giving it away a lot. And, you know, it was the type of performance that when it's, you know, not going well for a really good player, because they know they have it in the locker and they know they can do it and they know they're kind of, they're key to your team doing something, you know. So it was just a bit of disappointment in that regard.
And you do think that there's probably that player in her as well, in that as her career progresses now into the latter stages, she probably will drop back and become more of a controller. And she does have that ability to do so. So it was unusual to see her giving the ball away so often and maybe just taking pot passes that extra time last night, where, yeah, like as you say, should have just been composed, hold the ball, maybe play the ball back to the fullback, get it off them again.
Yeah,
but I mean the French pressure is also playing a role in that game as well.
Yeah, 100%. Like I think it's a weird thing that almost is weird to mention that, like the dimensions of the pitch as well, and that they've been playing with that narrow pitch when they can in their home game specifically, whereas France. Made a point of stretching the pitch as far as they possibly could within the FIFA restrictions. So that was almost like a retaliation to how we treated them when they came to Tala.
You do, which have is that, fair you, enough. You like, do put a big marker on you when you do that. So obviously with the pitch, don't you? It's almost like Arne Slot saying, we can't play against low blocks. You know, it's like when we narrow the pitch, the other team are going, right, well, when they come back over to us, we'll show what a wide pitch looks like.
I thought that we were tired certain points in the game as well, and I thought that definitely played a factor.
Yeah.
Now we find a second wind towards the end of the second half in the last 10 minutes or so, and I think Denise, like, she's been able to cope with it for so long, but she's so much work to do in that midfield.
Yeah.
Like so much work to do, because like you say, she's in that kind of controlling role now, but she's also the main playmaker really outside of Katie McCabe, so there's a lot on her shoulders there already.
Yeah, speaking of Katie McCabe, Stephen also spoke to the Irish captain last night after the game, and she was actually a little bit more positive looking at the campaign as a whole after the game?
Katie, how are you feeling after that result tonight?
Yeah, really disappointed. Obviously, there's an opportunity to win the game and go to the World Cup, but it wasn't to be. So, yeah, we can't feel sorry for ourselves. Obviously, it's time off now, so switch off, enjoy the off-season, refresh, and, yeah, have a strong start to the new season.
How do you assess tonight's performance by the team overall?
Yeah, look, I was really proud of the girls. It was a world-class strike from Mallard. I didn't think they opened us up too much in the first half, but I think we weren't particularly happy with how passive we were at times. We wanted to get more pressure on the ball, and I think the difference in the second half was we engaged a bit higher and went for them. So, yeah, look, 1-0 against a top team. And, yeah, difficult one to take, but we have to keep our heads up.
Yeah, do you feel maybe just the lack of chances created by Ireland tonight was just because you're up against such a strong, athletic, really good side?
Yeah, I think first half we were disappointed not to kind of secure the ball better in areas. But I think towards the end of the game we really pushed them. The keeper made two really good saves. Any other day that falls to us and it goes in. So, yeah, of course there's lots of things to work on. Yeah, we need to stay positive.
And it feels like there is still momentum with the team. You've got, you know, two very winnable playoffs, you would hope, to get to this World Cup. So how are you feeling optimistic you will be in Brazil next summer?
Yeah, look, obviously we don't know our opposition yet. In October, there's no easy games when it comes to qualifying for a World Cup. But I'm really proud of the team. Obviously, we started off the campaign with two defeats, and we really grew into it against some strong opposition. And I think a lot of people would have wrote us off in this group, but we held our own and we went toe to toe with some of the best teams in the world. And yeah, as I said, disappointed, but credit to France, they showed the quality.
Yeah, long season Katie McCabe has had. She'll obviously be moving to Chelsea for next year, so a little bit of time off now before the next season starts.
Yeah, she's probably
won't have to move house though. So
she's got a bit to think about for the next couple of months. I think ultimately wrapping this up, like you hear from Katie there, like Katie wasn't outstanding in the last two games. She had her moments. We mentioned Denise O'Sullivan wasn't at her best. This is an Ireland team that has relied on those two players very significantly for a long time. And post-Australia, there was a feeling that like that couldn't go on. There needed a bit more. And then you lose like legends of the game like Louise Quinn and Niamh Fahey, who the defence has been built around. You look at what this campaign has brought on and, you know, like Caitlin Hayes, who isn't young, like she's 30, but like she, you know, we can build around her for another cycle or two.
Yeah.
She was outstanding in both the games, the whole campaign really, but definitely the lad this week. Anna Patton beside her, you know, you have Aoife Mannion, I thought played very, very well as a right wing back where she would have played more centrally in the past.
She grew into the game.
Yeah. Jess Sue coming back, you mentioned her end, like, you know, she's had a horrific time with injuries. If she can be the player that we thought she was going to be, and from what we've seen of her in the last, you know, week or so, I think that's there. Abby Larkin obviously developing. Emily Murphy has been a find, obviously. The team is kind of a lot more than Katie McCabe and Denise O'Sullivan and friends.
I think people forget as well, like
our goalkeeper obviously as well is superb.
Like, mm-hmm. Before Megan Campbell left, like,
yeah,
she was like our main source of chances in games, like the long throws. People forget this, like, and they've had to adapt to kind of, you know, not having that in the Arsenal. And like, I think they've done an amazing job. Like Emily Murphy, as you mentioned, has been an incredible find. When she came in initially, there were probably some questions around what she brought to the table, but she's been amazing the last few games. Like she's that kind of tandem she has with Katie McCabe on the left-hand side has been huge. And like, I'd be fairly positive about where this team is going and where
absolutely. And it feels like as well, I'm setting this up of like a failed campaign, but look for the future. Whereas this isn't this at all.
No,
and people should understand that Ireland weren't expected, obviously, to finish top of this group. And the fact that they made it something that could happen last night is incredible. What happens now is the aim was not to finish fourth in the group. That was secured before this weekend.
Yeah.
And Ireland will go now into a very, very manageable playoff situation where they will have a two-leg game against a League C team, which again, there should be a massive gulf in class then. And then likely against bottom of League A, top of League B, whoever comes through the other path in the playoffs, again, it'll be a team that we will fancy ourselves.
We'll be favourites.
You know, we'll be favourites. Yeah. So, like, there's a huge chance. Ireland are in a better position now of qualifying for the World Cup than they were at the start of this campaign. So, again, it's a convoluted sort of new system that people might not be overly aware of. The aim wasn't to top the group and beat France and the Netherlands. It was to beat Poland.
It was a free shot last night.
They did it twice. Yeah.
Free shot last night.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's no fear of them going to Páirc Uí Chaoimh for this playoff, is there?
I don't know, actually. It'd be interesting, yeah. Do you think Páirc Uí Chaoimh could become the new spiritual home? I still think, I prefer them in the Viva, I have to say. I think I like the Páirc Uí Chaoimh thing. I think if we make something out of these playoffs and really build them up, I think you can get big crowds to the Viva. You might not fill it every game.
Yeah.
But do you not want to give 20,000 people the chance to go or, you know?
Yeah.
That's the same in Cork, I know.
Yeah, I'd like to see more fixtures in Cork.
They can still go. You can still go. It's just a train journey down.
No, absolutely. Sorry, I wasn't suggesting that. I don't know.
Dublin bias that we have here.
It's not a Dublin bias. It's more of a treating them as the national team, and I would like for the Aviva to be their home, and like then from there maybe you take, you know, there's pocketed positions about games where you say we'll have to do that, and maybe that should be the case with the men's team as well. But I don't see why everybody from Cork always has to come from Dublin and so on.
Yeah,
you know,
but Dublin is also more in the centre of the country, and when it's a national team, obviously you're getting more of a catchment than if you're down the bottom of the country, just like on a logistic level.
Yeah.
Well, every single motorway in the country leads to Dublin.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So there that's the logic.
Doesn't make it that easy to get there.
There are big stories in the papers as well. So just a final point on this is that this women's team have always been slightly different to the men's team, though, and it has always been kind of a good thing and a benefit to them. So if they were to play in Cork and make it a unique thing, I don't necessarily think that's fully a bad thing. That they wouldn't play their home games in Aviva in the same way as the men do.
Mm.
The disassociation from the men's team has actually aided these players and this team with sponsorship, etc.
I hope we're kind of past Tala, though.
Oh, yeah.
It would be nice. And this momentum of this like team performing so well obviously needs to continue. And we did see crowds drop a little bit when they weren't at their best, sort of in between these two World Cup eras, you know, in between not qualifying for the Euros and this campaign. So, like, it needs to keep up momentum. But I think it's a team that people have been watching on TV now for 5-6 years. Every single time they play, you get to know a team. Like, there's a wider discussion to be had about, like, women's sport and visibility and so on. But I think people watch this team now and don't think of it as women's football. They think of it as the Ireland team, you know, the Ireland women's team that we know. We know who should be where. We're having arguments about who should be playing on the right and who should be playing the left and so on. And that's a massive move forward, and I hope it does translate into bigger crowds, you know, at some point. Just going back to the Mail then, as we move on, because they have mentioned here at the top as well that Lowe, forever grateful for his 9 years in Ireland. It feels like longer than 9 years, I have to say, as he agrees move to Japan. I didn't realise that the Japan thing was confirmed, but it's obviously widely rumoured. He will leave Leinster, Dara, after the URC final next week.
Yeah, it's one of those that's been in the oven for a while that he would leave. He was kind of rumored to leave at the same time that there was some uncertainty around Jameson Gibson-Park's contract and Bundiaki's contract. Those two lads got sorted and James Lowe didn't, so people were kind of thinking what's going on with that situation. And then months went past and there was no real updates, and obviously it came out that he was unhappy with the offer put on the table for him at the end of his current contract. And, you know, it seems that talks kind of just broke down, and he's made the decision, the tough decision, he's, as he described it, to leave Irish rugby to head to Japan. And, like, I think speaking as, you know, someone that's been in press conferences with him, and I've never spoken to him one-on-one, but, like and as a fan, it's incredibly sad to see the way it's happened. Like, at some point, these players will move on, in most cases. It's just the way it's happened, and that, you know, he's leaving, not with a sour taste in his mouth, but feeling slightly maybe, you know, let down by the offer he was given is a real shame. And, you know, you're looking at the reaction to the news yesterday that he is leaving is largely sadness and negativity towards the IRFU and how they've handled the situation. And
Leinster or just the IRFU?
I think both, but I think the Leinster is slightly less is warranted, because in my opinion this should have fell on the IRFU to pull their weight a little bit more. You can understand Leinster don't want to pay a huge amount of money for someone that might only play 5 or 6 games next season, and the main reason he would be signed on would be for the World Cup.
Yeah, surely it is bizarre though that it even got to this point where there was potential for him to leave like this in a World Cup year. That's just as someone who pointedly will say that it wouldn't be huge following into rugby.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like that makes sense, and it seems like some planning has gone slightly askew there.
You're saying that it would have made sense for him to be signed on post World Cup.
Yeah, I think even whenever he signed his last contract, surely you would have signed that until the end of the World Cup. I know he hasn't been setting the world like lately. He's had a couple of injuries and all that sort of stuff. Like, but he's definitely someone who would have been in Andy Farrell's plans, surely.
Yeah,
World Cup.
It's a weird one with the contracts. Like, he would have been on a decent contract. He was on a Leinster contract, but with a top up from the RFU, which is a player, they call it a pony contract. So it's a player of national interest. So not a central contract, but like, he'd be on better pay than most players at Leinster.
Okay.
So those, I don't think those contracts tend to be too long. So that's probably the issue there. But I know we were speaking before the show, Mick, and you're almost surprised that he's not on a central contract.
Yeah, especially that he never was. I thought he might have come down from one, but I was surprised that he was never, because he was obviously a very central figure, pardon the pun, in what Ireland have been doing under Farrell for the last few years.
Yeah, I just think, if I'm to put one word on it, I think it's just a massive shame. And like, I remember we were speaking to him during during November Internationals Gone, and he spoke about like his love for Ireland, and it was kind of amidst all the talk from the English press around, you know guns for hire and stuff like that. And he kind of responded to it brilliantly and almost had to stop himself midway through his answer, because he was about to start crying in this like
midweek
presser that meant nothing. But it just shows the investment that Irish rugby have put into him, and he's set up his family here, and he's lived here for the best part of 10 years, and he, as he said yesterday, he calls this home. It's almost ridiculous that it's come to this, that he's felt like his hand has been forced to make a decision on his career.
Yeah, and I do think public reaction as well, because I always think James Lowe was a very good face of what the project player could be, and a good representative of that, and kind of would win people over that might be skeptical to that. And I think one of the fears they have is like, oh right, as soon as the money's not there anymore, they'll off, you know, to sunnier climes. I do feel like the public will be largely on his side here. It feels as though it was a derisory offer. Obviously, that's up to Leinster to kind of clarify as to whether it was, or, you know, they're not going to use that word, I'm sure. Mm. But it feels as though it was at that level where he almost, as a professional, couldn't accept it.
Yeah.
So Leinster, basically, they have to pay 40% next year if they...
For central contracts.
Yeah.
So that's had an impact on their financial situation in general. So they would have had to pay more from this year, essentially. Or at least pay most of the bill.
Like, is there an argument to be made that, like, if they were able to keep him relatively close to what he's on at the minute, that the IRFU would be paying like a good chunk of it still, but then Leinster would be paying not as much as they potentially could be paying for him if the IRFU weren't footing the bill?
You'd probably need to just rip up the process a little bit for that. I think, like, we were talking about this earlier, like, Leinster will have to pay a bigger percentage of players' contracts now under central contracts. Mm-hmm. But given the amount of central contracts they have versus all the other provinces, it's still quite low.
Yeah.
But then again, it almost doesn't matter if you're budgeting and your squad cost is for 30% and then you're paying for 40, even if it was an unfair system in the first place, that's going to have an effect one way or another. So it's almost like the rights and wrongs of it almost don't come into it. It is a budgetary matter, like, you know, suddenly you have to pay for these players.
It's completely rational and pragmatic from the IRFU. It makes absolute sense as a business decision that it's a 32-year-old who's turning 34 later this year. Has probably lost half a yard of pace. I don't think it's unfair to say, but he still offers a lot on the pitch. But you can see where they're coming from.
A clever footballer, left foot.
Yeah,
you know,
he offers a lot, but I can see why they would not want to pay out big for him, or maybe keep him on the same contract. But I would just be careful with making decisions like this when you know there's going to be a negative reaction and you know it's going to rub people up the wrong way. Andy Farrell's come out and publicly said during the Six Nations that he wants to see him play at the World Cup, or wants him in the mix for selection. And like I say, it's pragmatic, it's rational, but there's a real, like, not maybe tone deaf feel about it, that it's like the fans didn't want this. And like that has to come into account. Like I know the main thing is finances and decisions will be made that people will be unhappy with. But you didn't have to move mountains for this. It didn't feel like a huge, deal to just give them a little bit more money. That's all it comes down to, really. And like, I still think we're, like, beyond all that, we're still losing a quality player for the World Cup. Like I said, he has lots of, you saw him against the Stormers at the weekend. He was excellent.
I think we're in agreement here. I think there's a devil's advocate point about like holding on to guys, you know, past their prime, and that it stops, you know, the tendency to go with experience, you know, maybe blocks, you know, the development of other players and so on. I don't personally feel that way. I presume commenters probably do, because I know that feeling is certainly out there. So do get your comments in on WhatsApp or on YouTube. And we'll get to it. We're going to talk to James Tracy a little bit later on. The only thing I'll say about Lowe, Dara, as you mentioned, you spoke to him in press conferences or whatever, maybe not one-on-one, but always seems like a good guy. I did a show with like, you know, a kind of an OB with like 400 people or something like that with him, when I was like not in a experienced position to be doing such a show.
Okay.
And kind of thrown in the deep end. And I have to say, like, an utter gentleman who just like went out of his way. It was him and Gordon Darcy on the night and Senan Elpu, and the three of them just could not have been better. But like, James was, you know, the mid-20s flashy rugby player. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I kind of, in some ways, you almost expected of the two kind of older pros who would know the way around. And he just could not have been more helpful to me and knew where I kind of needed it a little bit as well. And that was both off air and beforehand, and then when we were on as well, you know what I mean? And just, you remember things like that, because that's something that is easy not to do.
Yeah.
And it's easy not to help people out and so on. So, and I always feel that he bought into being here in a very, very real way. And I do feel that that's one thing to look into with the project player. And that era is probably over or coming to an end now, you know. But I do feel like if you take the main guys of it, the faces of it in Gibson Park, Bundy, Lowe, and CJ Sander while he was here,
yeah,
I think they all took it very seriously. Yeah. That they were changed, that they were representing a national team. Yeah. And whether that meant that they changed how they felt about nationality or anything like that is irrelevant, and nor should they. But I think they took it, they did not see it as a mercenary thing. They bought in fully, like, you know, and I think that's so important, or else it wouldn't have worked otherwise.
100%. No one wants this. Literally, like I heard yesterday that the mood in the Leinster camp is very down, and, you know, he's such a popular player amongst the players and the staff there. It's like, absolutely not one person wanted this outcome, but just one of those things.
Okay. We'll get back to a couple more of these stories now in the papers. Just looking at the Examiner here, obviously more on the Ireland game there as well. Ireland fall short in Grenoble. But up the top here, Munster final fallout. Ref didn't tell us. Late free was final play, says Mark Coleman of Cork, who was at the All-Ireland Championship launch. Yesterday, also in the Examiner, there's a piece here about the funeral of Cork legend, football and hurling All-Ireland winner Dennis Colan, who died over the weekend. There was a warmness to Dennis. I'll miss our chats down in the marina. So that's a lovely piece, and from Shawnee McGrath there, the former Cork hurler in the Examiner. And then more news from the world of GA. Queeley quits Daisha role. So Peter Queeley has stepped down as the manager of Waterford after a four-year term, which probably didn't go well, but seemed to show signs of life this year. You know, it probably feels like it was probably time up, but if he was ever going to stay, it'd be almost after this season, where it felt like they were kind of getting a little bit momentum together, but they did ultimately still finish.
Yeah,
you know, outside of the qualification.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't obviously get through. Yeah, and they hadn't gotten through at all. But I don't know. I don't want to speak for Waterford fans. I don't know. Did it feel like it was coming like the end? I know 4 years is quite a long time, I suppose. And when you're not having any tangible,
and it was the end of a term.
Tangible success, it was the end of a so end of term. So you would have to bet in for another 2 or 3 years or whatever. Yeah, that's fair enough. I'd say probably frustration would be the kind of key word that I would use to summarise that sort of period, in that they came close on a number of occasions in a lot of games and just couldn't quite get over the line to such a degree that they would get out of Munster. at the end of every campaign, there was always the chat around, well, sure, season's over now, and, you know, we're not going to have summer. And that's kind of just
I was kind of sick of it a little bit.
Yeah, but like, I can imagine, when I say frustration, I mean from their perspective, because I feel like they're not a million miles away. And for Waterford as a hurling county, a proper hurling county, that's no consolation, really. They don't want to be not a million miles away. They want to be up there competing for All-Irelands, absolutely, 100%, as they should. I don't know. I don't know how they'll reflect on the last couple of years, because I'm not sure that the level of player that they've got there, there's obviously the Ballygunner thing, which takes on a life of its own, and as far as getting players in and playing for them, and the domination that they do have in the county championship, and that's always something they have to, in a weird way, they have to contend with, because it's an anomaly, really. It's not something we see in any other county. So I don't know how the Waterford people will reflect on it, whether it's positive or negative. I don't think it's totally negative, but it's not been a roaring success either. But I don't think Peter Quigley will be. I don't think he'd be kind of reflected on in a negative light.
Yeah,
it is mad though.
And
like
it was
when
refreshing
you
to have him so spoken out too, like as well spoken, which is good.
When you look at the club scene over the last like 10 years, nearly. The two most dominant sides are Ballygunner and Ballyhale. And neither of those has transposed into multiple All-Irelands for either county. So, like, it's
now, Ballygunner's rise has coincided with a fall in the standard of Waterford.
It is interesting, though, is the impact of having one properly big, dominating side actually a negative one when it comes to the county?
It's a strange one, though.
There's a feeling around that,
I think there was an issue as well with a lot of the Ballygun players wouldn't actually play for Waterford either. There was a lot of them too where they weren't actually playing for the panel. It was a similar thing with Down.
They were older players and they were probably making that decision based on
the
fact that they've long years going to the All-Ireland final every year and so on. But
of course, but the point still stands.
It's
the best players in the county weren't playing for the county team, and you get a similar thing with Down for a long time with Kilcoo being so good and not having all the players playing for one reason or another. So there probably is a little bit of that too, but again, you'd have to really look in to see if the causation and correlation kind of line up there.
Yeah. Ballygunner now are going to have two senior teams in the Waterford Championship next season, which I think says a lot, you know. The other thing just on Waterford then is, like, I kind of got to the stage where I'm like, I can't have this, you're not hurling in the summer conversation again, you know, because that's the system and, you know, maybe qualify once in a while, but they're in an unbelievably tough like group, I suppose, for want of a better word, every year. And I understand that. The one thing I'd say is, right, when the All-Stars come around, which they still haven't changed the dates of, by the way. It's still the same times it used to be, which used to be a month after the end of the season, and it's now 3 months. When the All-Stars come around, when they start talking about nominees and all, have a think about how fresh to mind, you know, Stephen Bennett's performances are. Because it's a long bloody time. And if you take, you know, May all the way to when they start hurling again in the league in January, like, how is there any momentum to be built up there for a sports team of any kind? It is a long time not to be playing. Like, it's a long time. The best fans in the world will forget half the players.
That's the one thing. You know? The other thing is, and this was mentioned as well at the time, I'm not sure if Peter Quigley himself said it, but it was mentioned around Waterford going out, in that if you're not getting out of your province on a regular basis, over time, the amount of non-training hours that you're not going to have compared to the likes of Clare, for example, this year, who have gotten through, and Offaly, who have gotten through, they're going to have an extra prolonged kind of at least month, 6 weeks of their season that Waterford aren't going to have. And if you have that for 3 or 4 years, that's a couple of months in with a county panel that you're not only at your strength and condition, all that sort of stuff, which they're able to do at any point, but just being in and around each other and creating a proper panel and kind of whatever manager you have, especially with Waterford now going to have a new manager, and they need as much time as they can to bed in whatever system he wants to.
And levelling up, if you're a guy who's kind of like on the periphery in the club scene, but is a good natural player, the longer you're in with a county system playing against the Ballygunner lads.
Exactly, and they often say about young lads coming in from the 20s and all that, and them needing maybe 18 months or so to bed in, get up to speed, and if you don't have that extra 6 weeks at the between whatever it is, April and June, 8 weeks. It's not ideal, but to be fair, you always have to caveat this with, if you just play a bit better and get out of your province, then you won't have that issue. But there's reasons as to why.
I suppose it's a vicious circle, though, as well.
We're not naive to that point, but Yeah, it's another character, I suppose, gone, but it'll be interesting to see who they bring in.
It will be interesting. It's interesting to see how big a job that is for certain people now as well. But the other hurling story in the Examiner there was the Mark Coleman interview yesterday. Rachel was down there as well for us, and she spoke to Mark about a very similar thing. Let's have a listen.
We'll have to ask you again about the free towards the end. You were involved in it, receiving the ball from Collins. Did you ask the referee how much was left? Was there any communication there on the field?
No, I don't think it wasn't a matter of time. I just thought we were under the impression, I suppose, that we had maybe one play left or something like that, and that we'd get the opportunity to work a score. But Joe James, the ref obviously had to get up and be where the ball was landing, so it's fair enough that he didn't tell us or that we weren't able to ask him, or so we were probably just weren't aware of the situation. But I don't think, like, it was so far back that if the ball was going to be landing in the square no matter what, it was going to be blown up. So I think it's a bit of a nothing behind, really.
Yeah. It's been said about provincial finals recently that, you know, all that matters to this team is the All-Ireland, and that Munster is secondary. But by the reactions of the Limerick players, we saw how important provincial finals are at the weekend, aren't they?
They're massive, yeah, sure. We were when you're growing up, you mostly go to all the Munster Championship games when you're younger, up in Turles and around Park and Keeve and stuff like that. So you want to be winning Munster Championships, and when you're in the final, especially on the day, you want to go out and win. So we're probably disappointed to be on the wrong side of it.
And Offaly now in Turles in 2 weeks' time, who, you know, quarterfinal stage, it's always a slippery one, and they might be seeing this as a bit of a free shot.
100%, yeah. You'd expect them to be going, you know, they've had a fantastic year, and you'd expect them to be full of confidence and throw everything at us. And, you know, we have to move on very quickly now from the Munster final and get ready for that, because I'm sure they're going to be a difficult task for us.
That was Rachel chatting to Mark Coleman there yesterday. She has loads of interviews with the under 20 stars across our social channels if you want to take a look at those. Loads of good stuff on GAA this week as well. Tommy was speaking to Jack McCaffrey as well. Full interview. You can get that on our YouTube channel. So Mark Coleman there, interesting. Referee took some slack, but, you know, as he says there, it's not up to the referee to tell them. So
in
their hands.
Yeah, it felt like it was trying to draw a line under it. It does feel like as though, like, why did Cork not have a better sense of what the crack was? You know, it did feel like a fairly pivotal moment in a game that was well over time. You won a free. I think there probably is an expectation that you will be able to sort of like benefit from that free, that I would stand by. I don't think that a foul should result in a punishment, you know, for the team that's been fouled.
Outside of the free that has been awarded for that. Like, that's the punishment.
The free is, what good is the free if it's just a ball into the ether? And then it's like, you know, you should be able to, like, if the Cork were passing the ball through their hands at the time, the chances are, if they completed another couple of passes, they would have had a scoring chance. Whereas then Garrod Hegarty stands in front, fouls the man. Like,
but don't take the piss.
That shouldn't
though.
Be
like,
a bet. That's where
use
I'm
your common
to.
Sense. There's two and a half minutes over the allotted time. You're not going to get another minute and a half to take the free and get a chance. Like,
yeah,
it's not up
injury,
to the referee,
like,
to give Cork an opportunity to score from that if they don't take the opportunity within a certain allotted time. Like, how long can you really ask the referee to give them an opportunity to shoot? They had two passes in the thing and then lobbed it in. Like, you missed your opportunity. They had their opportunity.
I think if he lobbed it in initially, I think he would have let it play. I think if Mark Coleman, who was the initial pass was two, had lobbed it in, he would have let it play. I think when they took the second pass, went, that's enough.
Exactly, you know? that's
and
my
he actually
point.
Blew
is
the
like,
whistle
have some
before,
common sense with that.
I think it was Tim O'Matney caught the ball. Like, I think he blew the whistle like immediately as soon as
he
thought. I honestly thought that he was annoyed.
I think the referee was potentially like, you are taking the piss here. Get the ball in, lads. Like,
I ultimately think it's that too, I have to say.
Someone just has to clarify that, whether that's someone on the pitch, maybe it's a lack of leadership, to, you know, one or two retirees in the last couple of seasons, or like, even if it's just one of the coaches on the sideline, you know, just shout on the message, like, listen lads, this is probably last book of the game, make it count. Like, it's as simple as that, but it's huge ramifications really on the season, because not that obviously they can go on and win an All-Ireland now, but the momentum is definitely with Limerick now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Depends what you value more, though. Do you value momentum or do you value a chip on the shoulder?
That felt like a big
result. I actually feel like by the the time everything settles this week and the way everybody reacted to that, I think they don't have a chip on the shoulder about this anymore. I think maybe the overall refereeing they probably do, but
Because I wouldn't mind that. When we were talking about this on Monday morning, I sort of said that I was like, whether they should or not, they will have a chip on their shoulder. But listening to Mark Coleman there, I'm sort of thinking maybe they're rowing back on it a bit and going, yeah, we maybe could have played that out a little bit better ourselves. Which is where I would lean on it. I think I just said this the other day. You cannot allow for that to happen.
No,
what happened happened.
Like. Isn't it an interesting idea though about how much a chip on the shoulder or like dressing room wall material matters? Because my instinct would be, would you not be better off having an absolutely roasting video session where you are like self eviscerating about your performance and about your game management and all that, like, and that kind of launches you into the rest of the season, is that we won't be caught like that again. Or going and saying, well, we would have been fine if it wasn't for that bollocks of a referee. You know what I mean? It's weird that we kind of instinctually go towards the latter there, whereas actually, is that not just papering over your own cracks?
100%.
Well, you're one step away from saying control the controllables there. Like, Limerick have
not to sit
on the fence with it, and it's an interesting dynamic when you've got a panel of probably 30 lads who will play between now and the end of the season. Maybe that's a bit too much, but it is a case by case thing. And I think if you think that going and saying the bollocks of a referee or whatever, if you're going to do it like that, that actually might bring something out in two or three different lads, and that might be what gets you over the line in the final. Whereas if you go the other way, it might bring something out in 10 lads, and maybe that's what you want. I think it just depends. Maybe you say one thing to one lad and another thing to another, and then you still have your roaring video session, and maybe you say to one lad before, look, this isn't about you, this is about a couple of different
things.
You have to, and those are dynamics that come into it. But I think it's hard to know when you're outside of it. I think every dressing room will have a different atmosphere around it too, and I suppose it's just what gets you going, really.
Okay. Just rattle through a couple more stories before we finish up here. The Irish Times have I had the right paper, says Somali referee. That's something we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. But very interesting story there that was mentioned on the show yesterday about the top-ranked African referee who isn't going to be allowed into the World Cup after being denied entry to the United States. FIFA saying, oh, American can do what they want with their own immigration thing, despite the fact that they have banned countries in the past from hosting events because they wouldn't let teams in. So some early hypocrisy. Telegraph has the ultimate World Cup picture, which is Harry Kane playing cricket. We're really on World Cup Eve now. But just an interesting little story at the bottom of this. Sullivan banned from any contact with women's teams. So David Sullivan, the West Ham United co-owner, who you will have know, stepped down recently and has been the subject of a Panorama documentary about a lot of historical allegations, banned from contact with the club's women's and youth team for the last 3 years, which I think is really interesting and something that should be looked a little bit into more, because how do West Ham have that information for the last 3 years where they made such a move? Yes, everything is only coming to light now. 3 years is a long time, and who knows what happened before that. And then the Indo, briefly, one of the stories there from Dan McDonald, that Rovers and Pats set for six-figure windfall for duo's World Cup involvement. Obviously, two League of Ireland players at the World Cup, Joseph Anang and Roberto Lopez. But the actual story here is windfall, it says, they're going to get up to €125,000 each, which is big money in the League of Ireland. But it's a lot less than what they thought they were initially going to get, which was, I think, it's going to be closer to 5,000 a day than the 9,000 that they thought they were going to get. So it's actually, windfall is one way of looking at it. Disaster, if you've budgeted for it, it's probably another way of looking at it. So that's the papers. One thing that isn't in the papers that didn't make it, it was late last night, was the really sad news that broke late last night about the death of former Ireland middle distance runner Kieran Linhart. Just 38 years old. He died in Canada, where he's been living for a number of years. Someone that we had on the show multiple times, I suppose, over the years. I remember speaking to him as early as 2011, 2012, in the build-up to the London Olympics, where he really was someone that, like, there was a lot of high hopes for. He was, like, you know, talk of, like, maybe 1,500-metre final. He was a European bronze indoor medalist in the 3,000 metres, but maybe thought we could make a world final in 1,500 metres, which was, like, you know, in 2012, unheard of for, like, meds. And he got a really bad Achilles injury not long before the Olympics. Now, he did run in the Olympics, but I don't think he was ever right. And his career kind of petered out from there, and it was just injury after injury after injury. And obviously he's had a kind of a difficult time, I suppose, over the years since, but just really awful news. But he was just such a interesting character. He was always someone that was very fascinating to interview.
Yeah, a bit of a maverick character, really.
It
was always that way as well. Had real laid back kind of laissez-faire approach to training, which is like unheard of in athletics. It's either you're working really hard or you're not working at all. But like coming through the ranks, it was always a thing of that he was highly touted and was tipped for great things. And obviously you mentioned he ran at the Olympics, but was, I think it was the Achilles during that period that was really bothering him. And I remember talking about it after the race, after his heat, that it was just like, I've had an awful time here. This has not been a good experience. And he had the bronze, obviously, in the European indoors in 2013 was probably the highlight of his career. And yeah, it's incredibly sad. He obviously spent a lot of time in America as well. We've had him on the show plenty of times. Real sad news coming through last night, all right, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Massive condolences, obviously, to his family and friends here. Really, again, just awful news to hear.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
I suppose they're just the memories why we play the game. It's why we do all the training. It's why we go back in whenever we go back in. And I suppose just memories of that and having two cans inside the dressing room, a bit of crack, a bit of music playing. It's just what it makes.
Join
it really.
In the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.